You're listening to an Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce. But I can only make so many. Happy birthday.
And welcome back, and thanks for hanging out with us here on this week's episode of the Epic Film Guys podcast. I know it's been a couple weeks since I've been on the show, but I've been eagerly anticipating talking about this movie. That's right, it's Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner 2049. We know we're a couple weeks late, but we don't really care, and I'm really excited. I had the opportunity to see the film when I was on my California trip. Nick saw it, did a written review on the page, but we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty and actually talk about it right now.
Ooh, the nitties and the gritties.
Nitties, gritties.
I'm only prepared for gritties. I'm not prepared for nitties. Oh, this beer tastes so fucking bad.
You with your
Lysol. I'm trying so hard to finish it, but I can't. It's. I'm actually, no shit. I never dump out beer, ever. What do you want? And I'm on the edge with this one. Like, it's almost there for me. Yeah, it's that bad, dude. It tastes horrific. This is too much swill for the guys at Netflix and Swill. That's how bad this fucking beer is. Oh, my lord. All right, well, Blade Runner 2049, Justin, to give just a little bit of a synopsis. We're going to try to keep this a little bit spoiler-free, at least for the beginning part, and then we'll kick into a few spoilers a little bit later on in our discussion. But essentially, it's set, 35, 36 years after the original film. And essentially, you're following the story of Kay, Ryan Gosling, who stumbles onto a mystery that ends up leading him back to Deckard. That's Harrison Ford from the first film.
You did something really special for this. You had never seen the original Blade Runner prior to seeing 2049, and you made the creative decision to not watch the original until after you saw the sequel. So I'm really interested because I won't even lie to you. I did not look at read or listen to your thoughts about either, because I really wanted to come into this fresh and have it more exciting. I know what your rating of 2049 was. Unfortunately, I'm not going to say it now, but I'm going to throw it to you, man. I want your initial thoughts, what you thought of Blade Runner 2049 going into it and afterward.
I mean, essentially, that's why I scrawled down my written review of it before I watched the original film, which I reviewed on last week's show with JD from In Session Film. Again, thank you very much, JD. Such a great, great time to have him in here. We had such a great discussion about that film. And it didn't hurt my experience going into this film. There were definitely things that I didn't, get right away. Like, I didn't understand who, a certain female character was. At first. And I assumed there's different moments, especially early on in the film when they're playing old audio files. And I could tell that they were from the original film, and I just didn't understand the context of them because, I hadn't seen the original film, but I just assumed that that's where they came from. But this, there's a lot of throwbacks in this film that go back to the original film, and I don't want to take that away from it. But this is really a film that you can enjoy without ever having seen anything about the original. And I'm not going to sit here and I'm going to argue that the film's length is 100% necessary. I won't go totally in the direction of some people who think it's an hour too long. I think they're totally off base with that. I think you could maybe trim 15 minutes out of this. I think this movie still needs to be. Yeah, this movie still needs to be 2.5 hours long, because the entire point and purpose of this movie, and it's not necessarily the most complex plot, but what you're doing is you're spending a lot of time lingering on camera shots, just living in these characters' world, living in these characters themselves, and really, really getting to experience the emotions. Villeneuve here, he essentially just kind of lets the emotionality of a scene develop itself onto you. And I love so many times in this film that it does that. There's different moments in this film where you're almost torn. You're I could see maybe if they would have trimmed a little bit, fine. But everything is so well developed and everyone is so immersive in their performances. We've got a lot to talk about in terms of the performances in this film, especially immersion in this performance. I said the same thing when I talked to JD about the original film. I'll say the same thing here. You are 100% immersed in this world from the opening shot. And the first thing I want to talk about with you, Justin, because I know you're going to agree with this no matter what, is Roger motherfucking Deakins.
Yes.
And the cinematography in this film. I have seen few films in the past decade that are as beautiful as this film is. That's why I can't. No matter how I felt about the plot or the characters or anything, I was never coming out of this with a negative rating because of how unbelievably beautiful the photography in this film is, and how that camera, how Villeneuve and Deakins are just able to take that camera and immerse you in this world. It's so picturesque. It's so beautiful. It's so pristine. Every shot is so intricately crafted, so perfectly staged. Everything, the color palette, the way that he uses color and hue in this film, from the orange washed out desert scenes to, you know, how dirty and dingy futuristic Los Angeles looks, to then you get those shots in the snow, like where everything's pure white and just like, oh my God, dude, just I got to push it over to you and let you talk about it for a little bit, because I'm going to come in my pants.
I'm going to go through a list right now. I'm going to name a few things and let's see if you can recognize what they are. The Shawshank Redemption.
Never heard of it. Nope.
Oh, Brother, Where Art
Thou?
No Country for Old Men.
What the hell are you talking about?
True Grit. Skyfall. Prisoners. Unbroken. Sicario. Dude, that's what Roger Deakins has been nominated for an Oscar. And guess what? He's never fucking won one. Ever. This man has been nominated for that many Oscars and he's never won. And I'm telling you right now, I'm putting my money on it. I'll bet anyone in the Movie Pod Squad, in the Podfix Network, in the internet, whoever, Facebook, you name it, I'm betting you right now he is going to win this year for Blade Runner 2049. I can't even tell you, Nick. I expected it. I mean, the trailers gave it away and people were talking about it. Oh, you knew it
from the trailers,
And one of the things I even said when the first trailer even got released was, if Deakins doesn't win an Oscar for this film, I'll riot. And upon watching it, and small little story there, I saw this film when I was on my family trip. That's correct, ladies and gentlemen. We are in San Francisco. There are plenty of other things we could have been seeing, walking across the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, I could be still hanging out with Stephanie Tanner at the Full House, seeing what could happen to her. You know, who knows, man? You never know. But I mean, it was our last day there. And I knew that when I got back from California, I wasn't going to be of sound mind. I really wanted to soak this in. And so I saw this at a Dolby Cinema, the best Dolby Cinema I've ever seen, the most beautiful picture and most beautiful sound I've ever witnessed in a cinema ever. The Dolby here was very large, very comfortable. And it wasn't one of those ones. I know a lot of people are complaining. I think our brothers in the Podfix Network, these Super Movie Brothers, were talking about a Dolby Cinema near them where like the shaking, the subs under the seat are a little distracting. This was not like that at all whatsoever. It was the most beautiful presentation of a film I've ever seen. Literally every single pore on Ryan Gosling's face, every single wrinkle they attempted to hide on Harrison Ford's face and his makeup were fully present. Like, you could see everything. And, you know, I just couldn't wait any longer. We're on our trip. I wasn't going to wait longer than a week to see this movie because I could not wait for it. And I'm just telling you right out of the gate, it did not disappoint. And yes, Deakins will win. Oh my God. Like, why is it that more bigger movies can't look this good, Nick? I don't understand it, dude. I mean, this movie, you know, as we're going to get into talking about a little bit, by most, the elites and cinephile community are considering it a failure. It had a $150 million budget, and so far with its worldwide gross is only at $156 million at that right now in its third week. So,
yeah.
But no, I mean, I can't tell you enough. I walked away immediately just mind blown by how beautiful this film looked.
Yeah. And I mean, they did it not only, as I was talking about, with the colors, but they also do it a lot with the lighting as well. There's a few different times where they really get literal with the lighting, where they'll kind of, you know, you'll think you'll kind of figure out where this mystery is going. And you're basically seeing the entire thing through Kay's eyes. And then, you know, he'll get plunged all of a sudden into a dark light you know, because he'll get kind of the rug pulled out from underneath him and they'll throw a curveball at you or throw a twist at you. Everything about this movie, Justin, is just so picturesque, so perfect. Like, even the simpler shots, even the smaller moments where, you know, like, think of when Kay is out at the house right at the beginning of the film and he's standing next to the tree. Just the way that those shots are framed with that dead, gnarled tree twisting up. I love how white and gray and washed out that tree looks. How, you know, there's this kind of just fog in the sky and there's this whole gray kind of, you know, fog atmosphere to it. And then Gosling's just standing there next to it. Just the way that the shots are framed in this is perfect. Literally, I mean, you can't. I thought back to a recent example, Justin, was Mad Max Fury Road is one thing, right, that I named out, because it's so, you could turn the sound off for this and you could just enjoy the visual spectacle that you're being served up, because so perfect. And you know, there's a lot of other things that we need to talk about in this film, but I mean, that's really first and foremost. You have to mention that right out of the gate, you know, because I think, you know, in a film that has a lot of standout things about it, I think that it stands out the tallest. No matter what else goes on in this film, you're always awed by just how breathtaking the shots are in the film.
Well, I gotta say this up front before we move on to the other categories we'll be discussing about the movie was, you know, the one thing that I came away from with this is there are some green screen elements in this movie, but you know what?
Oh, yeah.
Even seeing it in that Dolby Cinema with like the highest contrast ratio, the highest quality you could possibly see, it never looked fakey fake. And that's a Loisos term, by the way, fakey fake. When, you know, all these comic book movies,
fucking Loisos
blockbusters, you know, and you can see the actors, even in a film last year that both of us loved, for example, Hacksaw Ridge, Mel Gibson's film with Andrew Garfield.
Oh, yeah.
There's some, you could
definitely
scenes in
tell where, there were some green screen elements in that. You know, yep.
And it's just Andrew Garfield standing in front of what's supposed to be like a forest on a mountain. And
I consider the budget that Mel Gibson made that movie for when I think about that, because that budget was like a fifth of what they spent on Blade Runner 2049.
Right, right. But, you know, even so, even on the Marvel fare, even on the comic movies, even on the other big budget stuff, I can look at it and it does. It stands out when you're like, oh, it's green screen. But in this, even when I could tell Ryan Gosling was standing in front of a green screen, it never looked that fakey fake. It never looked bad. It just looked genuine and real and real world. And it kept me invested in that world. Like, that's the one thing before I move on that I have to say is that I was never once taken out of this movie. And you know how much I piss during a movie, right? You know how many times I go to take a piss? This movie was almost 3 hours long, Nick, and I did not leave the theater once to take a piss. That's how immersed I was in this world. And I felt like if I left, even you'd for 10 something. Seconds, yeah. I would miss something that would connect to something else later on in the film, and I would regret not being there to see it. So, yeah. I feel like the next step for me is to, like, get the elephant in the room addressed. Mr. Ryan Gosling, who is kind of stepping in here for Harrison Ford from the original film. I mean, Harrison Ford basically carried that original film as the singular focus for the most part, even though there are a lot of other characters in that film. And I feel like we follow Kay, played by Ryan Gosling, the most in this movie. And as you said, very rightly so, we're following this world. We're seeing this world through his eyes. And, What'd you think of Gosling in the movie? I mean, this is coming off of him being Oscar nominated last year for La La Land. What did you think, man?
I mean, I'll say it from here. We're not going to be able to talk about like character and plot elements of this film without spoiling something. So be forewarned from here forward. You know, we usually will just kind of talk about a movie, whatever. But this is a movie where, you know, Denis Villeneuve, you know, actually asked people not to spoil anything intentionally. So if you don't want to hear the rest of the review, I may actually put the timestamp in the show notes if I can remember to do it, which I probably won't. But just, yeah, skip this part if you don't want to know spoilers. But Justin, Gosling, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And I find it odd because I know he's gotten some criticism for some of his you know, performance in this role, but he's a fucking replicant. Like, of course,
come on.
Of course, he's kind of, I mean, and we'll talk about this because there's a lot of stuff I want to dig into with these characters. But, you know, especially like in the beginning of the film, he's very, very one note. He's very, very emotionless. That's intentional. Like, I feel like I go back to Edward's Godzilla film when, and I was an ardent defender of Aaron Taylor Johnson in that film when a lot of people were like, he's terrible. And I don't think he was because of the way he was detached when he grew up. Like, he was detached from his father, who he thought was a whack job. His mother died, and like, he was a soldier, so he was really, really good at trying to keep his emotions in check, but he still had some emotive moments in that film. Same thing here with Gosling. Like, you know, he, especially in like the first, probably I would say third of the film, he's fantastic, you know, as just being this emotionless. He's just a detective. He's a Blade Runner, and he's just trying to figure out what's going on as he starts to slowly kind of peel back the layers of this onion that is this mystery. And yeah, I thought he was fantastic. And there's a lot of stuff to dig into with his character, because as the film starts to progress and as you unfold these mysteries, and especially when you start talking about memories, I know we're going to talk about memories a lot in this because it's Blade Runner. And when we start talking about Joy, you know, who is absolutely sensational, Ana de Armas, unbelievable how good she was in this film. And, you know, there's a lot of things to peel back, but I really, really think Gosling does a nice job of, at first, he's really detached, and then he slowly, as he gets more invested in things, you as an audience member get more invested in things, and you can tell when he's starting to show more and more and more emotion, and when he's starting to become even more invested. And yeah, I go ahead, because I got to hear your thoughts on this as well.
Well, I'm going to reference a movie that you're not as fond of at all as I am, but it's one of my favorite films, probably top 20, is Drive, which is a reference film.
Sorry,
but
I fell asleep.
Here's the thing. Shut up. You didn't fall asleep during the film. You liked it when you first watched it. Keep going.
Hi, doggy.
but I mean... you can even watch that film as reference for this, because knowing what Gosling is playing as K in 2049, if you watch Drive, he gives a great performance with very minimal dialogue. It's mostly in his eyes. And that's when you can tell an actor can carry a performance like that, when you don't need more than maybe literally more than 10 lines of dialogue on an entire movie. Yeah. And you're just following a character. I mean, let's face it. There's a lot of the things he does in Drive in this. Ryan Gosling staring out a window. Ryan Gosling staring at this. 2 minutes straight of a beautiful shot of just Ryan Gosling in an atmosphere in the rain or whatever it may be. But it works so well, and he can handle it. He sells it. And I feel like that build up from Drive and a couple other performances he did before this really, you know, it got him prepared for it. And I think that's why he's the perfect candidate. A lot of people did complain, say he's not the star power that's necessary. And I'm like, who would you put in this role, though? Like, who would you rather see in this role? He's a movie star, but he's not in the sense that you're thinking like, oh, it's Tom Cruise as K or Brad Pitt.
I feel
as
like
K.
That's too nitpicky. It's too nitpicky.
Oh, I agree. That's what I'm
he
saying.
He does perfectly fine in the role. You know, I mean, he actually, and I want to get into this actually just a little bit, you know, as you talk about, and we'll talk about humanity and kind of the way, and of course the original Blade Runner, definitely commentary on humanity as well, but you see a lot of it, especially in his relationship with Joy, who is not even real. She's just a holographic projection, and she's an even more emotional character than he is. But even though these are two artificial characters for, you know, all intents and purposes, you still buy into the relationship between these two, and you still buy into the affection for and the love for these two, and you know, the love that they have for each other, you know. And it's fascinating to me, you know, especially after watching the original Blade Runner, because it's definitely an extension of that, the way that they take these characters that are artificial, that are meant to be, you know, not real, and they take these characters and then they project these human emotions on them, so you can kind of view them through a lens a little bit. You know, there's those scenes later on when especially when Gosling's seeing his memories and stuff like that, where, you know, his eyes, you talked about acting with his eyes, he does it so perfectly here. The emotion, the torment that's just kind of raging through him when you look into his eyes is fantastic. And, you know, you can tell, you know, with Joy, I mean, again, she's not real, but there's
a
love there. There is.
How good of a job, though, do they portray this relationship of two beings that aren't even real life? And we're going to get to this, but as you just said, it's an extension of the first Blade Runner. And one of the first things I walked away with after seeing this was a lot of sequels feel like they're shoehorned. They're not necessary. And thinking about a sequel to Blade Runner never made sense to anyone that had ever seen the original. Most fans, when they heard they were doing a new Blade Runner, really got pissed off. Even though our own J.R. Taylor, like avid fan of the show, was like, you know, he wasn't sold on it for a while. And a lot of people were just like, it's not a movie that requires a sequel. The first one was not a box office smash. It's a cult movie at best. A lot of people love it, but it's not sequel fair. But when you watch this movie, it feels like the sequel is necessary. You're like, oh my God, it really invests you in the same world that you grew to love in the first film done by Ridley Scott, one of his best films. You're like, wow, this is an extension, and it feels necessary when you see what these characters are going through and where they lead to at the end of the film. I absolutely love that about it. Like, you know, Villeneuve did a fantastic job. I can't tell you enough. If he was not the man that directed this, it wouldn't be what it is. He is the reason why this movie is what it is.
I agree completely. And I mean, yeah, it's definitely an extension when you think about all that the original Blade Runner does to talk about, you know, the human condition, especially when
what
you
makes
view
us
it
human
through the lens of, you know, Roy Batty versus Deckard, you know, and JD and I talked about it a lot last week, where as the film progresses, you definitely see a detachment in Deckard's character, where you start to see more and more, you get more emotionally invested in Batty's character as the film progresses. And it's fantastic that they do that. And they do that same exact thing here. They make a replicant the main character of the film, and over the course of this film, he starts off as very stoic. He's very, very blank slate, and he just becomes more and more and more emotionally invested and more engaging as this thing goes on. And his relationship with Joy plays a great role into that. And his relationship with, you know, the other police in the LAPD, because, you know, he's a member of the LAPD. That's great. And as it goes on further and further and further, and then of course he gets to that point later on in the film where he meets Deckard, where I really think that they play on a lot of, you know, kind of what you see from Deckard more so maybe in the beginning of the original film, where, you know, they're both emotionally invested, you know, at this point. So I went back to this time and time and time and time again when I was writing my review, when I was watching it, when I was thinking about it, even when I was watching the first film. It's how immersive this world is. It's unlike a lot of other film worlds, where you don't feel as much like a viewer of it as you feel like a participant in it.
Like you're there in it, yeah.
Yeah, it makes you a part of everything that's going on. And I can't say enough good things about both, you know, Villeneuve's direction and, of course, Deakins with the cinematography, all of the performances in this film, even though feel like there's a few other performances, you know, that probably we could have gotten a little more mileage out of. But, you know,
I do want to mention right now, while you're on the subject of that, because you just mentioned Deckard, this is another film where we're like literally, you know, 30 years later and Harrison Ford's coming back for another sequel to a franchise that, you know, he's very known for. He's been known to say that he hated working on the original Blade Runner, but he liked the output, just not the theatrical cut, for good reasons, of course. But, you know, I was one to praise the hell out of his performance in The Force Awakens. It's a guy that's not like pulling out performances because he's not really doing anything. But then he does The Force Awakens. He's great in that. And in this, I'm just going to you may disagree with me. You may agree with me. But Harrison Ford in this movie is almost nomination worthy. I was shocked at how good he was in this, because when you see him in interviews, Nick, like, I'm just being realistic with you. He's like grumpy old man. He legit is just like, I don't really know what I'm... It's Harrison Ford, old man Harrison Ford, like, sitting in a room, doesn't seem to give a shit. But when you see him in this movie, you're like, dude, it's like... pure talent running through this guy's veins. Like, I don't know how you still do it at that age. There's very few people still at that age churning out performances this good. He blew me out of the water, because he could have either made it or broken it for me, because, I mean, he is Deckard, and he doesn't show up for a while in the movie, which I thought was great.
A long time, yeah.
You know, I was happy about that, because I'm like, I don't want him to show up too soon, so the focus is you know, skewed way closer to him than Kay, but I thought he came in at the perfect time. And man, his chemistry with Gosling is just spot on. And I just think his performance is brilliant. I thought he was absolutely fantastic in it.
Yeah, and I think there definitely is some grumpy old man Harrison Ford in this, especially when you first meet him, because he's very standoffish and he's very antagonistic toward Kay. And it really takes a while to kind of get into him. But then, you know, you're absolutely right. He's got scenes like when, you know, he is, you know, they present the new Rachel to him. You know, what a great scene. And he doesn't even say anything. And it's, again, acting with the eyes, just like his emotional expression. Like,
one of my favorite lines was
so great.
I almost teared up because I had just rewatched the original Blade Runner literally like the week before we left for California. And it's a very silent scene. Like, there's very ominous tones in the background, and they do present the new Rachel, which, by the way, you know, we should just address it now while we're doing this. You were not a fan of what they did with Tarkin in Rogue One, and digitally reconstructing young actors and actresses to make them look brand new. I thought what they did with basically Sean Young looked completely real.
Yeah,
I was
a big fan of it. Yeah, I thought it looked fantastic to the point where it didn't miss a beat for me. And again, I watched this before I ever watched the original, so I had no idea who that character was. You know, but you could tell, and that's one of the great things about watching it the way that I did, is because you could tell in Ford's performance, he sells completely how important this character was to him. When you first see her, like literally the instant you see her, you can see in his eyes exactly what she meant. Yep. And you could tell the way that she's dressed, like her does. I knew she was had to have been a character from the original one, the hair, the costuming. I was like, yeah, she's definitely a character from the original film.
One of my favorite scenes of his, though, in his performance, not to cut you off there, was when he looks at her and you see that emotion in his eyes and you see that passion and you see that love. And then he turns to the side and looks down and he was like, her eyes were green.
Yep.
And I loved it so much. Like, come on, dude. Like, Harrison Ford's still pulling that shit out of his back pocket. Like, I don't know. Just so fantastic. I loved that scene altogether. And you know what? I'm going to give credit where credit's due here, okay? Basically, you know, stepping in for Eldon Tyrell's character from the first film, played by Joe Turkel, we have Jared Leto in this movie. Okay. And a lot of people give Jared Leto shit. He plays Neander Wallace, who is basically the head manufacturer of replicants in this year of 2049 in Los Angeles. And, you know, people give him a lot of shit. Even though he won an Oscar for a really good movie because of his Joker, people like to hate the hell out of this guy. And I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was pretty good in the movie. I think he had a great presence in the movie. He played a blind dude that makes replicants, and there were some pretty chilling scenes with him. I don't know what you thought of him. I'm just curious while we're starting to move forward to the rest of the review.
It's an interesting conversation to have because, of course, like one of the first scenes, or I think it might actually be the first scene where you get introduced to him, you get to see that replicant being born. You know, and then, you know, the replicant's just standing there and then he immediately just cuts the womb right open and kills it right there. You know, and it's kind of an interesting commentary wherein, you know, he's blind. So, you know, obviously he's got, you know, something about him that's missing, but yet he so easily kills that replicant because of it just speaks to the coldness of that character. It's a great bit of kind of dramatic irony there, I thought. And I absolutely love that. But I will say I didn't mind his performance. I should say, I thought his performance was good. I just think he shows up too little. I think he pops up like here and there, but then you barely see him for like long stretches of the film to where I almost forget that he's in it. You know, you spend a lot more time instead with, you know, his, you know, right-hand woman, as it were, you know, who is, you know, simultaneously, like, her motivations are really weird, you know, because at first they're trying to help Kay, and then when they kind of realize that Kay is not really working with them, they're trying to work against him. Really, really cool. Like, I really, really loved that whole aspect of it. But you don't get to see as much of him, which I really, when I walked out of it, that was one of the things where I was like, I really would like to see more of that character. And, you know, I think, like, I understand why we didn't see a lot of Batista's character. I loved his character. I love Dave Batista.
Oh, he was good. Very good.
I love him so much. But that worked for me because you only get a little bit of him at the beginning. And I also loved Robin Wright as Lieutenant Joshi or Joshi or whatever the hell her name is.
Oh, she was fantastic as well.
I thought she was great in it as well. And she definitely had a few good scenes, you know, back and forth with Kay. And it's like I said, I mean, you go back to the whole thing from the first film where you're talking about humanity, where you're talking about that contrast between, you know, she's a human being and he's a replicant. And, you know, she's, you know, kind of cold in a lot of ways, and she's kind of cold and unfeeling, and he actually has like a tinge of compassion to him. And I thought that was great. I thought that was absolutely fantastic, you know. But yeah, Leto I would have liked to see more. I really, really would have liked to see more of the Wallace character. I don't know. I know there are people that are criticizing the actual performance. I think the performance was fine. I liked him in it. I just, you know, but then again, what else were you going to do with that character?
I mean, because they did make him blind, long hair and a beard. I mean, it looked like Jared Leto being Jared Leto to me, so. but he did a good job of it. That's what I'm saying, though. Like, you know, in the scenes that he was in, I felt like he was very, very good. Yeah. You know, so, and his right hand woman there, she was, oh my God. As soon as I saw her show up and knowing that she was a replicant, she immediately, like, absolutely immediately reminded me of what Sean Young did in her performance as Rachel in the first film.
Yep.
Because the way her eyes moved and her movements and her speech, she seemed almost like she studied what Sean Young did in the first film. Because when you watch that first film, you know, you question without knowing at first, like, is she a replicant or isn't she?
Yep.
And you question her humanity, even though you know she's not real. And you watch her eyes, and I feel like she did the same thing in her character. And I loved that part about it, is that everyone felt so genuine. And it felt like, again, going back to that, it's an extension of the first movie. Nothing felt tacked on to me. Nothing, for me at least, felt shoehorned. Like, there weren't Easter eggs thrown in there, Nick, for me, that felt like they were there just to be there. Everything was there to make sense, to follow the storyline and follow these characters and see where they were going to go.
Yeah.
None of it ever felt like, you know, because we get Easter eggs in all these movies all the time, like just fanfare, you know, fan service, throw it in there to make them happy. And this did not feel that way at all to me.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm going to throw my rating on it here in just a moment. But the last thing that I really want to mention is the score from Zimmer and from Benjamin Wallfisch. I think that it was a great contrast to kind of the way that this thing really slowly unpacked itself. I loved the deliberately slow-burned pace of this film. I thought Villeneuve did an excellent job with that. But Zimmer's score and Wallfisch's score, it's really kind of bombastic at times, and it really booms with like those synthesized sounds. Really, really great. It was really powerful, and it was really, really energized at times when the film itself wasn't. So I felt like the music, you know, Zimmer and Wallfisch used the music to keep everything investing. And, you know, you got the amazing, again, the shot composition from Deakins, just the overall mastery on display here was across the board, you know. And like I said, I probably could have lived to see this thing shortened by maybe 15 minutes, but that's it. And that's a nitpick at best, because like those 15 minutes, that would have been 15 minutes of breathtaking shots that you would have had taken away from you, you know,
that you never get in anything else.
And it's tragic that that's the case. And yet you mentioned that, why don't other films look this good? And well, just because you don't have people that give a shit about investing you in really creating a world to immerse you. And I'll go back to that word time and again for this review: immersion. I rated this exactly the same thing as I rated the first film, Justin, an 8 out of 10. You know, it's a great, great, great film. And yeah, I really think Deakins has got to be the front runner for cinematography at the Oscars this year. It'll be interesting to see where that plays out, given the film's box office and everything. But we know critics absolutely loved this thing. And in terms of Academy politics, he's definitely long overdue. So I got to kick it over to you. So your rating of Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah. just to finish up, yeah, you had mentioned on your last note there the score. I've been listening to it constantly. If you want it, I can send it to you. I have it. I bought it. I love it so much. And it's weird thinking about what Johan Johansson did for the film that we never really heard. He was the one that did the score for Arrival, and he got booted last minute, and they brought on Walfish, who did the score.
He got booted, and no one knows why, because he can't. He's contractually like not allowed to tell us why, which I think is okay.
Yeah, so they brought on Zimmer, which at the time I was like, oh, okay, I love Zimmer. I just don't know where the summer, but he didn't seem like the right choice. But after hearing what him and Walfish did, and loving Walfish's score for it, I fucking love it. Being the synthwave fan that I am, it wasn't over the top trying to stick it in your face like, this is what we're trying to do, lots of synthesizers. It just felt like a continuation of the first film, just updated, and that's all it felt like. I loved that. Man, I can't tell you enough. This film blew me out of the water. I never expected rewatching the original Blade Runner about a week and a half before I saw this, and reinvesting myself in that world again, and then watching the new one and feeling that same feeling and being like, this is what I love about movies. My quote in my mind, Nick, was, I forgot how great movies could be. And then I watched Blade Runner 2049. Yeah. Because when you see, it's almost like, you know, we've got the Chris Nolans. Now we have, as we can say, the Denis Villeneuve. So we've got these people that just, they know how to make a fucking amazing movie with great characters, great performances. They're stellar looking. And there's actual context. There's stuff there. There's stuff to chew on. I loved it. You know, I'm going to go up one more point than you. I'm going to give Blade Runner 2049 a 9 out of 10 rating. It was near perfect for me, at least, especially considering it's a sequel. We know how hard they're to do, especially it's a sequel to a classic movie made in the early 80s. I mean, well,
especially
no
this
one
far
would have
removed
ever,
from it, too.
Exactly. No one would have ever thought it could have been this good, but it's all based on all the things we've already discussed during this review. I love it. It's a huge shame, and I'm so disappointed to see that the box office isn't doing well at all. But you know what, Nick? I'm not shocked at all.
I really hope people get out to see this. I really do before. I mean, it's going to get quickly shuffled out of main theaters. I mean, you're probably going to have maybe another week or two. Well, Thor Ragnarok comes out the beginning of November, and I guarantee it'll be gone.
Yeah. So. I mean, yeah, Happy Death Day just beat it and took number one this past weekend, which I'll be talking about a little bit. But I mean, here's the thing. It's much like the original Blade Runner. It opened to mixed reactions. It did not do well in the box office. Most people thought it was weird and strange and didn't get it. And then it got a cult following after a while. And you know what? Doesn't really matter. To me, it's a $150 million art film, in a sense, science fiction film. And either people are going to love it, which most people, I haven't seen one person yet that said I hated it or disliked it. They just complained it was too long. I thought it was fine. Yes, trim off 15 minutes. 9 out of 10 for me. I loved it. I can't wait to see it again. I'm so happy to hear, Nick, that, because I didn't know, man. I didn't know how you were going to react to the original Blade Runner or this film, because I knew that you had never seen the first one. So happy as your partner in this podcast to know that you enjoyed them both. So
yeah, the original, and I mentioned this last week when I talked to JD about it. It was watching this film first, I think, was a disservice to the original film, because there's so many things in this film that then when I watched the original film, I was trying to connect dots for the first, like, two-thirds of the movie, or first one-third of the movie, and I was too concerned with how does this line up with what I watched in 2049, where I wasn't just really taking it in and enjoying it, and I still really, really enjoyed that film. JD and I had a fantastic discussion about it, so please, if and nobody's listened to that yet, if anybody hasn't listened to it, please go back and listen to that. It was great, but yeah, I've definitely, once this comes out on Blue, I've got to watch them both, you know, in the right order, and then really get that visual and get that experience of it as well, because I really, really did enjoy them both. So yeah, it's
I'll say this much in my closing statement is that as much as I love 2049, and as much as I think it's a great continuation of the first film, I don't think anything in the film ever gets quite close to the Tears in the Rain monologue by Rutger Hauer as Roy Batty at the end of the first Blade Runner. I feel like that's such a powerful cinematic moment. It gets close. There's a moment very, very, very close, and they get extremely close to the power of that moment at the end of 2049, but it doesn't quite get there. But I mean, I feel
for me, just because I don't have the attachment to the original that you do, or that a lot of people do that have grown up and seen the original time and time again, I'll say it's like, for me, they both had the same impact. Like, they were both okay. incredible scenes.
Fair enough.
But I could definitely see, you know, somebody who's been a fan of the original for fuck your whole life, you know, being as invested in it as you are. So yeah, I mean, but yeah, God, we could go on and on about fucking Batty and about the original Blade Runner, but I already did that last week.
Check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.